we're going to continue with the videos, and then I will ask Ken and the other first presenters to sit down here. Yeah, so the next presenter will be Toby Ball. Let me just introduce Toby. So Toby Ball, alias Psychologist, is a hip-hop artist and a fifth-year DA student at the University of Lethbridge. He was born in Sudan and immigrated to Canada with his family at the age of 17. Toby took interest in audio engineering after having been dissatisfied with the work of some sound engineers in Calgary. And so he began to record his own music. After spending over 2 years of recording himself, as well as his artist friends, he decided to pursue the field of audio engineer and eventually apply to the UofL. During his studies in the DA program, Toby recorded and mixed projects with some artists across Alberta as to gain experience working with artists, networking, and as well as building a portfolio. As a hip-hop artist, he recorded and mixed his recent album titled Reflection. His enjoyment of film production led him to take some new media courses in order to advance his knowledge in that field. With the given background, Toby has been fortunate to assist me in the digital ethnography of recording studios in Bamako research for the last year, and therefore had an opportunity to co-present with me at the Audio Engineering Convention in the US in New York City last fall. Currently, in his last semester, Toby spends his weekends volunteering as a sound person at his local church and working on some freelance projects. Thank you, Toby.
All right, so in this video right here, it was about 3 hours long, but we had to shorten it in order, for the purpose of the presentation here. And some of the things that I was able to observe, I will just mention a few of them. Of the producer Bakozi, he was working with the artist named Koro, and in the video, some of the things that I'm going to point out is the fact that he uses a plugin called Rewire to pair the software Cubase and the FL Studio, in which he would load samples onto FL Studio and somehow record it into Cubase. As well as he also makes editing really efficient by using keyboard shortcuts, and he edits in multiple. It would select multiple tracks. At the same time, he would often process instruments or vocals shortly after recording. So meaning that he usually doesn't really set a time aside for mixing, as a lot of us would do here in the West. He would usually record an instrument or two, a couple of them, and he would process them immediately, applying the reverb or whatever he feels is necessary in that, in that time for that specific instrument. He also he uses presets mostly on the plugins. He rarely spends time, manually adjusting the EQs whenever he uses them. And he also typically records a melody or a pattern of 4 bars and then duplicates it. So he would record up to maybe 8 tracks and up to 4 bars, 4 or 8 bars typically, and then eventually he duplicates it. What a lot of us do, myself including a lot of people that I've worked with, is that we would usually loop something. If you're gonna play something across the entire track, you would loop it instead, but he would duplicate them instead, and he would duplicate in a group and eventually makes changes. So if he decides he wants to change the drumming pattern for the next 8 bars, then he would select that in the newly duplicated section and remove, change that. Or if he wants to change the melody in the synth or something. So so here's the video. The screen recording quality is not very clear, so it's hard to follow, but I tried to add some text underneath it just to kind of explain what he's doing.
Ouais, mes étudiants me disent que ça s'appelle Rewire.
Rewire.
Tu savais ça?
Ouais, vous m'avez dit.
Ah, je te l'ai dit l'autre jour. Ok, excuse-moi, j'ai oublié.
Rewire.
Ouais, c'est ça. Donc là, tu commences une nouvelle session.
Ouais. Avec des aussi, ne parlais pas français.
C'est vrai.
C'est
pas grave,
on a
Mamadou est là pour nous aider. Il y a pas de problème.
Ok.
Elle est là. Thank you.
album ça c'est répétition.
And has been involved in planning music festivals and concerts in Lethbridge for several years. His music research ranges from augmenting a drum kit alongside Carter Potts and supervised by Dr. Andrew Stewart, to specializing hip-hop music in a binaural format under my supervision. Kieran had the opportunity to travel to Toronto for a professional development week organized by CARAS, and Musicons. Kieran also had the opportunity to present in an academic paper session and in students' poster session at the Audio Engineering Society's Professional Audio Convention in 2019 in New York City. Kieran is extremely involved in student politics and clubs at the university, previously serving as the Audio Engineering Society Lethbridge Students Chapter Executive, the Fine Arts Representative for the Students' Union, and the Digital Audio Arts Representative for the Department of Music. Thank you, Kieran.
Hello. So in the video, you will see both the producer and the studio owner slash engineer interacting with the musicians a lot. But for the slides, I'm mainly focused on Baba Simaga's process in the recording studio and his creative process in the studio. So Baba Simaga, he uses the studio to his creative advantages, and he really uses the technical features to basically bring out his creative drive in the studio. An example of this is he uses looped recording to triple track different instruments such as the electric guitar line. And typically when you see double tracking or triple tracking, you'll see multiple takes going the full way through, and they'll stack those on top of each other to get a chorus effect. But instead he uses the loop and then he splices it up and stacks those on top of each other to achieve the same thing in a much more timely manner. And Simaga also takes short snippets from the guitar tracks. Interestingly, you'll see they'll do a full take of a guitar line, and then he'll just find little sections of motives that he really likes, and he'll take that and he'll copy and paste it throughout the entire track, creating several layers of loops that way. And Simaga also uses a different track and session at one point to help the percussionist work out a new line for the track. So you may see in the video that he pulls up this session and then they sit there and listen to that session together, and they use that as inspiration for this track that they were currently working on. And Simaga often starts with presets when using different plugins, but also what I noticed is he knows how to fine tweak the settings and get exactly what he wants from them. So he'll start with the presets and then he'll tweak from there. So he kind of uses those as reference points. And Simaga uses both the mixing window and individual clip gain to change the different volumes of the different tracks. And it's all depending on whether he just wants to turn up the gain of one certain section or whether he wants to affect the entire track. And Simaga uses both the editing window, the MIDI editing window, and the single waveform editor as well when working with different tracks. One thing I noticed is he does not make extensive use of shortcuts. And another thing that I found super interesting is he used a frequency spectrum analyzer when EQing the bassy Dun Dun. And he brought up the frequency spectrum analyzer and used that to help him figure out where exactly he wanted to boost and cut for that instrument.
Thank you. So again, we're going to look at a little excerpt, but if you're interested, all those videos end up on YouTube. on the respective channels of the different students. So you just keep the program with their name and you're going to find it in a few weeks.
Okay. Mais déjà, il vit pas en coma. Là, on le voit avec la base d'abord.
Voilà.
Même là, on est. Okay.
Barisa, sunata ka kele ma fokuya te jani lu komande.
Boo.
Mais on a dit que ça tenait et que toujours. Ah oui, que Rinkangana là-bas.
Il m'a dit que c'est gaga.
Ça, tu préfères ça?
Ouais.
Thank you, Kian. So we're going to continue with a video that was edited by Leonard Menon. Hailing from Edmonton, Leonard is in his third year of the Digital Audio Arts program. He has been involved in numerous music and film-related projects over the past decade, and he's pursuing a career in the audio engineering industry. He's also a wonderful guitar player. You didn't write it, but I said.
I'm So this is a, I took a producer approach when looking at this video because we have such a short time frame and such a broad range of disciplines in this room. So what you're going to see is Omar Konate producing on February 16th of 2019, just highlighting some of the techniques that he's used as a producer to help the artist for a better artistic outcome. And I'll explain some things that he does after the video. For specific sounds and likely timbres, the more I analyze it, he's looking for something that can really fit into the mix and something that you'll notice across the spectrum of all of these producers is that they have a very, very good ear. They really know where things should sit in the mix. And he has a very accurate ear for pitch. So on one of the MIDI engines, he actually adjusted the pitch by, I think it was a value of 20 or 30 cents. And those of you that have done M-Skills know that that's very difficult. So the next bit is his methods as an efficient producer. So he controls the visuals of the tracks to focus more on the details. You saw that he did enlarge a track. He'll always enlarge a track when he's working on it. Specifically, I find at least here, a lot of us do not do that. We just kind of have the tracks all sized the exact same most of the time. But he likes to enlarge them to focus on a bit more of the detail work there. He creates layers by loop recording, which we did see in Kieran's presentation, I believe. And then he'll sift through those layers after and kind of find the best bits and blend them in. He applies effects to the tracks before he actually records, which is very gutsy, to say the least. He also edits clips while he's recording for an added level of efficiency, so you can get the product out within the 3-hour, 4-hour time frame that he's actually given. And then the final approach here is his methods as an artistic coach. So he helps the artist visualize the tempo, as we saw. He was trying to basically count the tempo for the vibraphone player in the booth. He makes the artist feel welcome. He's constantly smiling. If you saw the 2 hours of footage that I was working through, it was very pleasant to watch. It's a real human person, like some genuine human interaction, which I think is very important. And he has a genuine interest in the music. So he's clearly a music lover. It's very hard to fake emotions like that. And the fact that he could bob his head while the artist was simply practicing, I thought that was kind of important. It's a very overlooked, or possibly overlooked, a dynamic that we have here, which is you get into the booth and they smash out the recording and then that's it. So here they treat you more, his producer role is a lot more social, I find. And I think that's something that is quite important and something maybe we should look at a bit more. Thank you.
So I will ask Ken, Kerian, Toby, and Leonard to sit here. And one thing I was interested in doing for this round table, long round table, is to have Emmanuel Olivier, who is the PI of the whole project in West Africa, and who invited me to work on this project. And it's the first time Emmanuel is meeting my students and some of our collaborators in Canada. So I would like to invite Emmanuel here to ask maybe a couple of questions to whoever you want or to the group. It's, yeah. For the moment, just to them, if you have any question or reaction to their work.
I have plenty of questions.
Oh, so pick one or two.
Maybe as I know Ken and we have a lot of opportunities to work together, I will ask questions to Amandine's students that I know a little less. But I'm very admirative of the work you've done on the video because you didn't go to Mali, you don't know very well the music and the people. And I think it was a real challenge to do the work you've done. So congratulations to all of you. I don't know if you had time to compare the work of the three sound engineers, three producers, but I would like to know a little more about your comparison on the three way of doing music. Is there a national style or a Malian way of doing music? Or do you feel comfortable with this way of doing? I mean, is it a kind of globalized way of doing music in DAW on studio? Or is there a specific style for each producer, sound engineering? I would like to know more about this. I would be very interested about this. Thank you.
So one of the things that I find very interesting is in the Western world, we often divide up the different tasks in the recording process. So we'll start with the recording, and then we'll move to the editing after everything's recorded, and then we'll move to mixing, and then we'll move to mastering. So it's a very kind of like step-by-step process. But one of the things I noticed is they kind of everything is happening at the same time. There's a lot of processing during the session. They're adding reverb, they're adding EQs, they're adding compression as they're recording new tracks. And they're constantly tweaking the arrangement. They're constantly doing editing and changing things kind of on the fly. And I found that they kind of let the creativity lead the session. So they just kind of, they hear something and they do it right away. Which is something I found very, very interesting and very cool. And to talk more about the arranging, they really, really focus on the arrangement and getting the exact arrangement that they want. And they're constantly evolving the arrangement throughout the recording process.
In regards with how all of these producers work with the artist, I think globally within our three producers here, they have actually shown quite a lot of support for what the artist wants, as well as having an appropriate and it almost seems like a determined amount of creative input that goes into it. So it does seem extremely formalized, yet the artist is allowed to have a lot of the creative say, and the producer is allowed to have a lot of creative freedom. So it seems that these producers are acting as engineers, as the producers themselves, as the coaches. They're wearing all three coats, which is quite fascinating. It's a lot of work. It's a lot of social interaction that they have to be aware of. In regards of the technicalities of their similarities for arrangements, they do a lot of work with MIDI and a lot of loop recording, MIDI editing, where they will record things by hand that doesn't get quantized and then quantize it after. They'll leave out certain notes from the quantization to give it more of a human feel. Something I found quite fascinating is a lot of these producers will actually quantize a lot of the notes after the first impact to give that initial slight variance of time on the very first impact of the note. So they're all quite musically they're musical experts, to be honest, and it really sounds like all of them really love the art that they make.
On top of what you guys mentioned there, one of the things that I did notice as well, I guess especially with the one specific engineer who was a video that I analyzed, Bakuzi, is that for what he does when it comes to post-production, applying processing, such as using EQ and using compressors, it seems that as though, like, even though doesn't seem to be any understanding of, you know, the specific parameters, for example, like using presets, and that actually, to me, it kind of seems like it reminds me of before I actually started studying here, where I had no idea exactly what is really going on in the EQ plugin, in those effects, or the compressor, what is, you know, the specific parameters, like what is the attack, what is the decay, release and all that stuff. I really didn't have a good understanding of it, but what I was able to do was to just go on to the plugin and just use presets and keep on going to the next one until I find one that actually sounds more pleasant, even though I had no idea what it actually did. But it's quite surprising to see the result, to hear how the song sounds like at the end, because I did hear Bakuzi's song and the fact that he didn't really have a good understanding of these. And I think a lot of it comes from just education, I guess, not having the opportunity to be able to learn these type of things. That's one of the things that I found that was different than those of us out here.
So before we move on, I'll let you conclude.
Yeah, just maybe a last question to Ken. I would like to know, how do you feel when watching the different video, and do you feel that you do the same job, or what is different in your way of doing things?
Bon, je peux dire que on a tous nos façons de travailler, c'est vraiment différent. La façon que moi je travaille, et puis la façon que Omar Konaté travaille, ainsi que Bakuzi et Baba Simaran, c'est vraiment différent.
So he says it's very different. The way he works and the way all of them work is very different.
Parce que, en tant que moi, quand je travaille d'abord, si Toby vient chez moi pour chanter, j'écoute Toby d'abord, je mets du temps à l'écouter les chansons qu'il chante, je m'inspire aux chansons pour tirer quelque chose de bon.
So yeah, first, if Toby was coming to his studio to sing, he would first take the time to really listen to the song that Toby's singing and get inspiration from it.
Oui, et puis quand je trouve la mélodie que je veux, c'est par rapport à ça que je m'inspire.
So if he finds the melody that he thinks is good, it's because of Toby's singing.
Oui. Moi, ma façon de travailler, c'est comme ça.
So that's his way of working.
Oui.
Well, thank you so much, guys. Really, congratulations also. We're going to move on with...